We were talking about the
formation of Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. Arthur Blum was a president of Point Park College. He was the son-in-law of Dorothy Finkelwood, the founder of the Business Training College. And back in 1962 or 63, Business Training College became a junior college. In 1964, we became a four-year college, and I've been on that board of trustees from 1964 to today. And I'm now emeritus.
Uh-huh.
In 1991, I'm emeritus. What happened was, Arthur Blum was an extremely creative, imaginative man. The Point Park College started in the Woodwell wholesale hardware business at the corner of Wood Street and the Boulevard of the Allies, and subsequently we acquired the old Keystone Hotel, which had been the Keystone Athletic Club. Had a hotel there and about, 28 story building there, and we put a bridge across Wood Street to tie them together. And Arthur Blum then met Mrs. Faulk, and between the two of them they took the first floor of the building and created a magnificent ballet studio, which is still used today because Point Park has 180 candidates for the degree of baccalaureate in theater and the dance. And the place was set up beautifully. Then Mrs. Faulk persuaded her husband to acquire the building across the Boulevard of the Allies, and that became a school. At the time that we were destroyed, in 1973, Pittsburgh Press reporter, looking at Point Park and the exciting things that Blum was doing, decided to slant the story in such a way that Blum was made out to be a crook, and that he was doing things that were not appropriate, all of which was not true. But it really almost destroyed the school because it drove people away and drove the supporters away, and it took us almost
the
Pittsburgh Press ran a series of articles on Blum and Point Park. Completely ignored the fact that he and I together had purchased the playhouse.
When were they wrote that?
I'm sorry?
When was that article?
In 1973.
Okay.
And we had taken over the playhouse in time for the playhouse to tie together with the ballet theater to create a significant program, first of its kind in Pittsburgh, maybe in the whole country, of granting a baccalaureate in theater and the dance. These kids had to come up with 60 credits of schooling, and they got 60 credits over 4 years for performance in theater or the dance. And needless to say, hundreds of kids have since gone on to Broadway. We have Point Park graduates in every single radio and television station in the city, and we've got kids in Hollywood and 8 kids dancing on Broadway even today in 1991. It was an incredible thing. But what happened was, when the newspaper story came out, Mrs. Faulk was sure we were going to go bankrupt, and so she moved her ballet theater across the street and proceeded to tell her students not to use Point Park, which is a dastardly thing to do because she left us with the debt for having created the facility, the debt of having paid for the Petrov, the conductor, the director of the dance, because she then created her own director. And needless to say, her development was excellent, but her destruction of our program in the process was dastardly. Never forgiven her. My son-in-law is the treasurer for the ballet, and so my best friends are on that board. Pittsburgh Ballet Theater is a preeminent organization, but the fact that it had to destroy, try to destroy Point Park in the process, didn't strike me as being the nicest thing to do. Needless to say, we continue to succeed, We do the Nutcracker for some 20 performances every year at the Playhouse. We create well-trained people. We have something like 600 kids every summer, high school kids, that come to the Playhouse for a summer program.
Why was Point Park so important?
The Point Park was important because it gave the average child a chance. We were a ratio of one student for every, seven students for every teacher. And the closest you could come anywhere in Pittsburgh and most other places was 1 to 15. Now, we took kids, even though 10% of our freshman class graduated in the upper quarter, we would take C students and give them a start. There were classic stories of some of the wealthiest families in Pittsburgh. One particularly, we had Murray Rust on our board. He's a dear friend of mine. And I want to tell this story because he would have told it. Murray Rust was a seventh generation American. One of his great grandparents,
R-U-S-T.
R-U-S-T, signed the Declaration of Independence. And he was just a wonderful human being, still lives. He had a son that went to Lehigh and goofed off and busted out of Lehigh, came to Point Park. We were on the trimester system. We were the first school in this area to go trimesters. And so he came to Point Park for three trimesters, earned 9 credits, all A's, and went back to Lehigh and graduated. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rockwell had a son who played around and lost his direction, came to Point Park, stayed with us for a year, and went on to graduate somewhere else. Our first important graduate back in the late 60s went on to Michigan Law School. So that today, of course, it's nothing for our kids to go on to various graduate programs. But in those days, when we were fighting for a place in the sun, we were contributing a significant component to the Pittsburgh educational system. There was a Council of Presidents organized by Blum, and now you can register, cross-register in any one of the 7 colleges and universities. If you go to Carnegie Mellon and you want to learn how to play guitar with Joe Negri, you can register at Duke King to study guitar with one of the greatest players in the world. Now, what did Point Park have to offer? We were the first school in the state of Pennsylvania to offer early childhood education. We're still preeminent in that field. We granted the degree in theater and the dance, and you can't imagine how many kids want to go to Chatham and major in history or sociology that would love to take an elective in the dance. And then how many people do you know that would be thrilled to take to learn how to work the backstage of the Playhouse? So you have an incredibly important institution. The most important thing about Point Park is 20% of our student body was offshore.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Why? Right.
Because this was Blum's imagination. One of the things that Blum did was he had a place in Italy where you could take your junior year abroad. And the Pittsburgh Press says that guy's wasting money sending people. He can't even pay his bills in Pittsburgh, and he's providing a service in Italy. Lester Hamburg gave us a very famous estate up in Portersville, and the press twisted this around that Blum was using this as a summer home for himself. Why, you couldn't get Blum on the phone if you stood on your head on Saturday and Sunday, because he was out recruiting, he was out developing, and if you were lucky, his wife would be there to answer the phone, otherwise you couldn't reach him. And this was great, because when we went to recruit, we would be able to bring out 20 or 30 high school counselors to the Bell Acres and have a barbecue. We brought the American Wind Symphony up there to hold a program to attract some 20 or 30 people to support the American Wind Symphony financially, because this place could serve 300 people. Lester Hamburg had built a magnificent place there with tremendous facilities for entertaining. It's in Portersville. It's on Slippery Rock Creek. The Point Park had to sell it as a result of this newspaper article. We were the largest private four-year college in the state of Pennsylvania. We had 1,600 full-time people and 2,700 total enrollment, part-time on the balance. And we were wiped out. We got down to 1,200 students because the newspaper article was so drastic. Make a long story short, we're now very much back in business. And as you can see, Ed Ryan just recently gave us the Bank Center downtown, and now the Pittsburgh Carnegie Library is moving its two business branches down. We're moving our library over, and it's going to make an incredible facility for the city.
The Bank Center. Real fantastic.
Yes.
Apparently they couldn't find a good use for it.
And now we're going to put it to use. This is the story of Point Park. As a matter of fact, when Blum originally created, incidentally, when we needed to acquire the Keystone Hotel, it was Davy Lawrence that took us to Harrisburg and got us the money, and we're paying off, I think we have 9 or 10, well, we're going back to 2010 to pay off the state Pennsylvania Higher Education Facilities Administration. When the newspapers destroyed us, we were having trouble paying our mortgage. They helped us refinance.
Who?
The Pennsylvania Higher Education Facilities Administration borrowed the money from the University of Pennsylvania funds that they had to cover our mortgage payments to make our bonds good. See, PHEFA would issue bonds to cover Point Park's commitment, and they were paying 8%, 9% bonds. It was a great investment. And then when we couldn't make the bond payment, FEFA would borrow the money from New York to Pennsylvania because they were well ahead of their program, and we now have eventually paid the thing back. And now Point Park is up to a $10 million budget, maybe going on its way to 20. I was the treasurer for all those intervening years. It was a real, very interesting...
Who was the hatchet guy? Why were they so after
him? I was a Press Old News boy.
Yeah.
If you will watch the Pittsburgh Press over the last 25 years, their total concept is negative, destructive, sell papers. I guess they would tell you that, but in competition with the Post-Gazette, they had to attain notoriety somehow, and that's why they did it. I have to tell you, having been a Press Old News boy, I quit buying that paper 25 years ago, when I could see how many institutions they were able to destroy, how many people. Now, they have a wonderful McCarrigan editor, and he came to Pittsburgh about 6 or 7 years ago, and I wrote him a letter. I said, please, God, let this be the beginning of a new era in which the Pittsburgh Press helped to develop the community instead of tearing it down. A, B, C, D. These are the things that your predecessors have done that have hurt the town. Maybe you will take a different tack. We've got to have lunch. He wrote me back. We must talk. Oh, he never bothered. I didn't push it. But anyhow, we created...
Did the organization try to do something about these articles?
No. Couldn't do anything.
Couldn't do anything.
You had a letter to the editor. Go ahead, read the papers today and see what your letter to the editor did. Doesn't change their position. And Mr. Block is equally bad in terms of the destructiveness of his editorial page. Because he's got an editor. He doesn't take the personal responsibility. An editorial board will decide that they're going to pan something or take a position, and the owner of the paper sits there and he sits on his hands. It's a very dastardly thing, the power of the press. I attended a seminar in Florida just last Thursday night, headed by the president of the American Newspaper Publishers Association, David Lawrence, the publisher of the Miami Herald. And he said, I have to tell you, as a matter of historical fact, that we do not go out of our way to tear down. But in trying to report the facts, our reporters try to dig and dig and dig until they get a story. And the question of what part of the story to cut out is something that is a constant matter of judgment. Which incidentally reminds me that I was instrumental in forming a chapter of the American Newspaper Guild on the Pitt campus in 1937, when I was the editor of the Pitt News, responsible for freshmen. We had four of us who were co-editors under the aegis of Ed Beechler, who subsequently became the sports editor of the Pittsburgh Press.
Where did you start?
I started the American Newspaper Guild. You remember Haywood Bruin?
Yes, of course.
Haywood Bruin formed the American Newspaper Guild, the trade union for newspaper people. And I wrote to him and asked if I could create a chapter of the American Newspaper Guild on the University of Pittsburgh campus, and he said, by all means. And that's what we did. In 1938, I went into New York for a summer vacation for 1 week. There was a shipping clerk's strike, because for the first time in its history, the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union was attempting to organize the shipping clerks, the last remnant of their industry that had not been organized. These kids had pushed the wagons along the streets, and there was a fantastic strike going on. Fantastic in the sense that these kids were pulling all kinds of tricks in Central Park. They were stripping people and chasing scabs all over the park. And it was quite a time. And I wrote an article while I was there for the New Leader and got a byline.
Bruin, B-R-O-U-N. I can't remember how to spell it.
That was Haywood Bruin.
Which?
Haywood Bruin.
B-R-O-U-N.
B-R-O-U-N.
Yeah, he says his son, Haywood Bruin Jr.
Yeah, I remember.
It's a newspaper, is still a radio commentator. Haywood Bruin was a fantastic, exciting guy. Those were the days of FPA, and they met for Dorothy Kilgallen, and I tell you, I was recalling these names just the other day down in Florida. Whether you can remember
Crock,
Dorothy Kilgallen, and
Thompson,
FPA, and Thompson, and those were the days in which you had that fabulous guy down in Maryland.
Yeah, the son of a bitch.
He was very brilliant, very brilliant, great.
He denied the article saying he wasn't.
It was interesting. But the key is that we at Point Park then, 20% offshore, meant that we were getting kids from Saudi Arabia and from Lebanon. And to this day, we have Micronesia. And Blum used to go to Washington and talk to the embassies and invite them to send their people to Pittsburgh. And if you go back and read the graduation lists of Point Park, and I attended all the graduations from 64 to 90, except I wouldn't go the year they had Pete Flaherty as the principal speaker. I thought that was a new love. And if you look at those graduation lists, you would be impressed with the number of people from the Arab countries, the Muslim countries, that are alumni of Point Park College.
With Jewish ownership.
But they are now, you would be surprised that in Kuwait or in Saudi Arabia or in Yemen or in some of those Middle Eastern countries, and then across North Africa into Tripoli, into Libya, into Egypt, there are Point Park graduates who are in important positions of government, because they not only learned their English better here, but they also learned technical subjects that made them proficient. And that, incidentally, was another contribution of Point Park, that we offered the two-year technical degrees, and still do. We offered the associate degree, and of course about initially only about 35 or 40% would go on for the bachelor's, but in later years 95% of the people that took the associate's degree just to see if they could handle college went on to take their bachelor's degree. So now we have a distinguished group of alumni, and it's been an incredible institution. And I have to tell you, I had a daughter, my own daughter, who went to Kent State University and for a freshman year, and then came back to Pittsburgh and took three trimesters at Point Park, including one program that took her to the Lake Country in England on Aer Lingus, and they studied, this was a 6 weeks program for three credits that studied Ulysses and James Joyce and the whole bit. It was a very imaginative school. It was And so she then went on to graduate.
I never did understand the function of the point-to-point park. Did these Arabs, Muslims, know that finger parks were Jewish?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no problem.
No,
you have to realize, and this I can tell you from personal experience, that the history of the of Muslims and the Jews, the Arabs and the Jews, that you see in the newspapers has nothing to do with reality.
Nothing to do with their personal relationships.
It has nothing at all.
Personal
relationships. Nothing to do with reality either.
These people
live together, they share things, they know who they are, they know what they are, and they get along at a very high level. Now, there are exceptions. I happen to be at a Kfar Etzion in the West Bank that was destroyed by the Arabs. A bunch of American Jews, that were destroyed in 1908, came back and rebuilt, and destroyed again in 1928, came back and rebuilt, destroyed again in 1948. Now, three times they got wiped out, the whole village. All the adults killed, the kids, fortunately, stayed. And there they were in 1985. By God, Brooklyn Jewish people going strong. What did they have? A beautiful, huge building of turkey farm. They created a farm that had land for wheat, and they were living next door, right in the midst of the West Bank with their Arab neighbors. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, what's happening now is not in their right, this concept of jumping in there and building buildings in order to put people in there in order to outvote or whatever their purpose is. Shamir is absolutely a maniac for trying to overrun that place, because if he did nothing, there's several thousands of Jews that live in the West Bank now, they're going to stay there forever. Because when you're in Kfar Etzion, you can see the city lights of Jerusalem.
Yes, I've been.
And it's a beautiful place to live, and it's a wonderful facility because they're making.
They wouldn't be there except for the aggressiveness of those who went.
That's right, back in 1908. It started out when the Zionist ideal of all those years ago. Well, anyhow, you now have the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. And the reason you have it is because Mrs. Paul really put her heart and soul in it and developed a following among the general community and made a great institution. As I said, Point Park continues to have a significant program in the dance, and it's just a shame that we had to have this financial fiasco. The Falks were generous to Point Park. They gave us a piece of property on the boulevard, which we subsequently sold at an important time in our financial history, and gave us significant support.
How come they gave that little chapel to Chatham?
That was, again, the relationship of A.E. Braun to Leon Falk. Remember I told you many years ago Mr. Falk and Mr. Braun were on the board of directors. Mr. Braun was the president of a bank that's now part of PNB, and Mr. Falk was one of his best customers, and he permitted Mr. Falk to be on his bank board. Mm-hmm. See, the Mellons would never permit Jews on their bank board until David Shapiro came along. But the PNB was basically the president of PNB for the last umpteen years has been a Catholic. Mm-hmm. And they've been very friendly to Duquesne, and they've been always giving Duquesne students a special ed. And Mr. Falk was Mr. Braun's partner in the bank business, and he contributed that facility on the campus of Pennsylvania College for Women because this was what the board of directors did in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I tell you, it was unbelievable how they all supported each other. And now, of course, when Sire came to Carnegie Mellon, he did a huge job of attracting business people. Carnegie Institute of Technology was a good school. Mellon Institute had nothing but money. And that merger was an absolute anomaly, because the Mellons didn't like Mr. Carnegie, and Mr. Carnegie had nothing to do with the Mellons.
That's right.
Back at the turn of the century. It's a fortuitous meeting, and of course Dr. Sire has made it into a great institution. Again, if you look at his board of directors, it always attracted that same group of businessmen who had this social responsibility concept. And And of course, as I started out this morning telling you about the Democratic Party, this was always part of the same structure, because Davy Lawrence attracted General Mellon and the Allegheny Conference and the city of Pittsburgh's mayors historically always worked together. If you want to know how the system works, you get on the phone and you communicate. Some of the great young people in the mayor's office talk to, by the way, Bob Pease, the executive director of the Allegheny Conference, was about as imaginative a guy as you'd ever want to meet. He came from Alaska, of all places. Just a wonderful person. But he created a climate where these people felt comfortable sharing responsibility. Then I sat on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce for 3 years. I can't remember how they put me on there, but that was fun because you could see, again, how the social responsibility aspect began to take place. The young man, is, well, he's not a young man now.
What year?
I'm talking back in the 60s. It was interesting to sit with those people. Of course, I had the advantage of having been with them back to the 40s, because I was on the board of the United Jewish Federation at the age of 23 back in 1941. Mm-hmm. Because all the other kids of my age had gone off to war. I couldn't pass a physical, but I had a lot of fun. And here it was 20 years later, and these were younger people going through the chairs, so to speak. And then I helped the Junior Achievement, and I helped the Small Business Administration.
You helped Junior Achievement?
Oh, sure, because that was a function of the Young Presidents Organization.
When?
Way back, we started Young Presidents in 1951, and in the 50s we were assigning one person to help that keep going. And,
you're still on.
You see, it has a whole generation.
When this Junior Achievement?
When we started, we were supporting Junior Achievement back in the 50s and the 60s. And it was my pleasure, because we were a small business, to have the opportunity to meet all of these people. And it was exciting to see their responses to suggestions of social responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, these were human beings putting their pants on one leg at a time, who ostensibly only were supposed to have an interest in profit, and yet that was far from the truth. And they would take responsibility.
You say that, I'm trying to get you louder.
Right.
You say it was far from the truth that...
far from the truth that you had no social responsibility sense among the leaders of Pittsburgh's business.
They did.
We absolutely did. Westinghouse was a classic example. Pittsburgh Plate Glass, even to this day, if you realize that the chairman of the board of Pittsburgh Plate Glass is the chairman of the board of the Pittsburgh Opera, and the chairman of the board of the Symphony was the managing partner of, the president was the managing partner of Price Waterhouse, but the chairman was the chairman of the board of the Allegheny Ludlum Corporation. Each time you'd find the president of Mines and the president of all these major Pittsburgh corporations taking a position on these boards and doing something significant to keep the...
But that makes the professionals extremely jealous.
It does.
That's what I've always noticed. No?
Well, I never sensed that.
Good.
I never sensed that. It was, you could talk about interlocking boards, but in the area of social responsibility, it was very comforting to see this happening. And I always felt that we were unique in this city. And I've written several papers on this subject, which I would like to share with you one day. That would suggest to you that that wasn't my my idea of what the facts were. I did tell you about Hill City.
This is Sydney.
That's my dad, yeah. Here is the speech that I wrote at the annual meeting.
Yeah, then you're not speaking up enough.
No, I don't want you. I want you to decide whether that is.
You didn't put dates on this stuff.
That would all be interesting.
Saying?
We gave this dark distance. You want it on there?
Talk.
No, put a turn it off. Just,